From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Although the media pundits have been predicting the demise of the Trump administration since it first took office January 20th, in fact, the Democratic Party is the one that appears to be in a death spiral. The party lost the White House and both houses of Congress, along with many state houses and state legislatures, which has very important ramifications for redistricting coming up in 2020 and the shape of the Congress that will follow for a decade thereafter. Many observers place the blame on the decision by members of the DNC to put their fingers on the scale during the primaries, placing Hillary Clinton in the slot for the presidential nominee rather than Bernie Sanders. That scenario appeared to play out again last week with the selection of Tom Perez as DNC chair. For more on that, we spoke with Danny Haifong, a regular columnist at BlackAgendaReport.com. We spoke with him via Skype Sunday. When the fox becomes a wolf, understanding the election of DNC chair Tom Perez. Go for it.
Yeah, so, you know, in the last years of his life, Malcolm X extensively spoke about this development in U.S. politics where the Democratic Party and the Republican Party played a very familiar game, I think, for a lot of people in the United States today. He described the Democratic Party and the white liberal as a fox, because when it smiles at you, it shows its teeth, and it's hard to conclude any malicious intent. However, the Republican Party is a pack of wolves. When they show their teeth, you know that they're going to bite you. So when he was describing this, he was describing the Republican-Democratic Party game to basically allure civil rights organizations and black movement organizations into the Democratic Party trap. And now what we're seeing in the Democratic Party at this juncture is the pack of foxes becoming indiscernible from the Republican Party wolves. And the election of Tom Perez as the DNC chair that happened just a few weeks ago with very little coverage after the fact is a perfect example of this, given exactly who Tom Perez is and everything that he has supported, from his commitment to the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal, which he remained committed to even as Hillary Clinton during the presidential campaign began to backtrack once her and her campaign had found out that the Trans-Pacific Partnership was hated around the world. And his record goes even further to illuminate this divide in the Democratic Party, where he actively collaborated with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC leadership during the Democratic Party primary to sabotage the Sanders campaign, as WikiLeaks revealed. So what we have now is the Democratic Party basically giving someone like Donald Trump the opportunity to tweet on Twitter that the Democratic Party has basically ensured his victory in the 2020 elections, when all we see all over the corporate media is this anti-Russia campaign that, unfortunately, Tom Perez's opponent during this election period for the Democratic National Committee, Keith Ellison, is all for. So what we see is just the Democratic Party transforming into what Malcolm X called the wolf. And I think that this is really important. We really need to understand that right now there are no more illusions about what the Democratic Party is, and this should really guide our resistance and our movement activities going forward.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this was a replay, essentially, of what happened inside the DNC over the course of the primaries last year, with Perez, the favored candidate of Clinton, and with Ellison, the favored candidate of the Sanders faction, and the same outcome. And, well, the outcome of that for the November election was President Trump
and thus his prediction that they've basically engineered the same for 2020 by replaying the same game. Maybe you could tell us more about Tom Perez.
Yeah, so Tom Perez, during the Obama administration, worked both in the Department of Justice and the Department of Labor. First 4 years of the Obama administration, worked in the Department of Justice, basically giving the Wall Street financial institutions the ability to do things like foreclose thousands of homes for active service, active duty service members overseas, as well as just giving them, you know, extensive waivers to ensure that they could, that these banks and Wall Street institutions could manipulate financial markets all over the world. And then the Department of Labor, he went on to basically campaign for the Trans-Pacific Partnership every single year during his stint at the Department of Labor. And, you know, he represents the most the most reactionary of the Democratic Party establishment, and he's the perfect candidate at this time to carry forward the Democratic Party program, which essentially is now war with Russia and complete and utter service to Wall Street. He's also been a big opponent of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel. He's perfect for the big Israeli billionaire donors who are desperately seeking a more progressive face to carry forward the campaign to, you know, expand Israeli hegemony in that region. So, yeah, Tom Perez is the perfect guy for the ruling class, even though Keith Ellison's record is not so. It's not so progressive itself, but he really, what his mistake was not towing the establishment line and, in supporting Hillary Clinton over over Bernie Sanders. That was his big mistake, and now we're seeing him pay for it.
And Perez, to the contrary, was collaborating with Podesta and smearing the Sanders campaign.
Exactly. He actively collaborated to frame the Sanders campaign using all of the connections that people like Perez, Podesta, and the Clinton machine had in the media to basically paint the Sanders campaign as a male chauvinist, sexist, and racist campaign, when in fact a lot of the things that Sanders was advocating for, like a $15 an hour minimum wage, free higher public education, you know, those things would benefit, an array of people in the United States, including those who are oppressed by racism and sexism. So that was his modus operandi, and he's being rewarded for it. And I think that this is really important, because what it shows is that the Democratic Party is more committed to Wall Street and the unmitigated and unregulated capitalist exploitation of people around the world, as well as this whole campaign to drive home a war with Russia during the Trump era in order to regain power. And that's, you know, and that's the very definition of what a wolf is. There's no smiles anymore. And I think it's important to highlight this, because what we're seeing is an attempt by the Democratic Party to hide this fact by scapegoating Russia. Even as Trump had this State of the Union address, which a lot of them called very quote-unquote presidential, now we see the attempt by this section of the ruling class to divide his administration through an attack on people like Jeff Sessions for the very same accusation that Trump was facing just a few weeks ago, talking to a Russian diplomat.
Meanwhile, the insurgent champion, Ellison, it has his own problems. Black Agenda Report's been following, and you detail some of that in this piece.
Yeah. Keith Ellison is no one to really celebrate, although he may have supported some of Sanders's material demands in his program, he also was not he was not hesitant to support things like in 2013, the no-fly zone proposal and Obama's red line, which inevitably, if it had led to U.S. airstrikes on Syria, could have ultimately sparked a world war with Russia, and he was a big advocate for that. Also, he does not have the best record when it comes to voting on Israel. He decided to abstain from the vote in 2009 on the invasion of Gaza, which killed thousands of Palestinians, and then in 2014, although he didn't support an expansion of the so-called Iron Dome defense program of Israel, he advocated that the U.S. still support Israel's right to defend itself, which basically meant that the U.S. would not pull back any support from that invasion. So he also has a deep connection to finance capital. He throughout his tenure has not spoken up about the plunder of working class people by Wall Street. And ultimately, he's far from progressive. But at the same time, he still cannot match the service that Tom Perez has given to the ruling class during his Obama years. And we're seeing him being rewarded over someone like Keith Ellison, who was merely given rhetorical support for Bernie Sanders and nothing more. Really, what Representative Ellison is a cog in the Congressional Black Caucus machine, and that's what he's been most of his political career in the material sense. So this is really an ideological struggle at this point. The Democratic Party is looking to completely purge the party of its Sanders connection, while at the same time trying to keep this Sanders contingent close enough where they feel they can keep the votes. But it seems like a losing formula, and even Donald Trump is attuned to that.
Yeah, I mean, look, when I was in Philadelphia for the DNC, Sanders people were not buying the stronger together argument. They had a palpable sense of having been, screwed over, basically. And they were chanting frequently, that, hey, DNC, we won't vote for Hillary. Now, and we saw that basically at the polls. They just didn't turn out. Now you have a proxy battle between Sanders and Clinton with the same outcome, and yet they're expecting somehow that they're going to motivate these people who are now getting screwed over yet again to come back into Glenn Ford's big nasty tent.
Exactly, and it just shows the deep desperation of the capitalist elite that supports the Democratic Party. This system right now, this imperialist system, has nothing to offer. It has no capacity to self-correct. It continues to wage this attack on jobs and the public sector and the very, any semblance of international stability in the world. And yet it aspires to defeat this rise of really a new Republican Party under Donald Trump, which, although it may have very little to offer itself as it battles, this internal struggle inside of Washington with basically the entire state, barring his own appointees. What do people really have to support other than this Democratic Party, which how they define resistance is wearing white and sitting down during a State of the Union address and almost coming to boos when Donald Trump says things like the TPP is forever dead. Right now, what we're seeing is the Democratic Party is basically attempting to to reorient itself in a manner that is palatable to the ruling class and the ruling class alone. And I think that this is important when people will inevitably try to force down the throats of progressives and leftists alike that the Democratic Party remains the foxes, remains the, you know, the lesser evil. They'll smile at us, but yet offer us the very same program as their so-called opponents, and we have to be ready to fight against that in a period where at no other time has it been more apparent.
You know, one of the things that I keep smacking my forehead over is for decades, you know, for a generation or two, the primary organizing principle around the campaigns of Democratic candidates at federal level and state level has been that the Republicans are so terrible, they're fascist, they're anti-everybody, they're, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And the very Republicans that they were running these campaigns against while offering candidates that were just slightly, you know, softer than the image that was being painted of the Republicans as, you know, this is the only realistic way to beat them. Mm-hmm. You know, now that all of those Republicans lined up with the establishment against Trump, which is what happened over the course of the campaign, they suddenly weren't incarnate evil, but rather further proof that Trump was unacceptable and Hillary Clinton, you know, was the standard bearer of the fight against extremism.
You know, the last few weeks have been a whirlwind of this development that you speak of. I mean, you see the goo-goo gaga behavior of the establishment Democrats over someone like George W. Bush, who couldn't be more hated during his presidency, during his presidency when he was leading the charge to, you know, murder a million Iraqis and, you know, and yeah, institute this war on terror that continues to be the framework that U.S. presidents use in their foreign policy in that, you know, in the Middle East and North Africa. I mean, it's absolutely incredible what we're seeing, as well as, you know, this complete and utter attempt to basically keep Donald Trump in line. This whole thing about Russia where, you know, his administration is being attacked one by one for having discussions with Russia when prior administrations did that all the time. We're having discussions with Russian diplomats all the time before, you know, they entered office, because how else do you orient yourself with a rising power in the world? You don't just sit on your hands until you enter office. You begin to make plans, and before Trump, it was fine to do that. Now that Trump is doing it, it's terrible, and that's because the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, guys like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, I mean, these are people that were hated by the Democrats when McCain was trying to run for president, and now they're loved because they're waging this fake attack on Trump, and it's absolutely ridiculous. It's really just about how to best ensure the interests of the ruling class and the imperialist system, which is desperately in a intractable crisis that it cannot get itself out of. And I think we have to reject all of it, because I don't know what I think I know what's worse, the contradictions of the Trump administration or a world war with Russia. And I'm going to take the former. You know, the people that we're aligning ourselves with when we don't condemn this baseless rhetoric, we're aligning ourselves with the Tom Perez's, we're aligning ourselves with the John McCain's, the Lindsey Graham's, the George W. Bush's, who, you know, hilariously decided to go on the Ellen show and talk about how he began to see how bad Putin was when Putin made comments about the White House dog. I mean, this is how baseless the rhetoric is becoming against Russia and Trump, when in fact what we're seeing now under the Trump administration is more of the same, because ultimately this deep internal struggle has, one, prevented the Trump administration from the ability to ease relations with Russia, and two, that, you know, Trump's rhetoric about immigration and all this is ultimately able to be carried forward in policy because the Democratic Party and the Republicans have no problem with with, you know, the enforcement of immigration policy in the way that it has been, or an intensification of it. They have no problem with that, because, I mean, just look at the records of the two parties since 2000. You know, they've deported millions upon millions of undocumented people and created an apparatus that terrorizes them. So this is where we're at, and we have to be really conscious of it if we're going to muster any sort of resistance. And I don't even like using that word anymore, because corporate Democrats use it.
Yeah, it's like a trademark.
If we're going to organize this, any semblance of a radical movement with revolutionary potential, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party has to be the center of focus at this time. There's no other way to do it.
And, you know, one of the images that I have, and to conceptualize what it is that people on the left imagine themselves doing as they ally with, with those such as George W. Bush, Hillary Clinton, Wall Street, the 17 unnamed intelligence agencies, and the corporate media, is an image of a sea of people carrying signs that say dump Trump, and then in small type underneath that, everything from socialism now to 2020 Democrats to whatever other little message is supposed to distinguish them one from the other, without it recognizing the forest that these signs create and the outcome that it would create, which would be either a President Pence or a President Ryan, or if somehow this takes a slower track into 2018 and say Hillary Clinton gets elected to Congress and becomes Speaker of the House, a Clinton presidency or someone else placed in there. But in any event, from Trump to someone selected by the deep state, how can you get people to try to understand strategically that they have chosen sides in favor of, in essence, negating the 2016 election, which means a coup?
It's tough. I think what has to happen is there has to be some pretty genuine and deep discussion about how what's going on inside of Washington is ultimately a CIA-Pentagon conflict, as well as a conflict between two sections of the ruling class, the Trump faction and the rest of them, the majority of the ruling class, in achieving some key points that I think too many people, especially on the left, are willing to ignore. And I think part of it is a misunderstanding of how the state works under this period of U.S. imperialism, and just how the state works broadly, as Lenin defined it, where the state is always an apparatus of oppression in the context of capitalism and imperialism, the oppression of one class over another, or the oppression of one class over all the other oppressed classes. That is the definition of the state that Lenin defined it as. However, we have to look at the particular contradictions of the state at this time, where unless we're clear about our opposition to every fraction in the state, or at least we're clear that just opposing one faction, Donald Trump, will inevitably lead to something that's similar, if not worse, given the fact that division inside of Washington may actually be better for a movement than wholesale consensus on things like war with Russia, for example. That is really the task at this time, is to explain that, because I think that what ends up happening when somebody like Donald Trump, which is completely new to a lot of the, to everyone in this country, it's a new phenomenon, something that we haven't seen. It's a break, it's a rupture in the two-party consensus. And so people are having a hard time interpreting it and are using old old ways of looking at things and are looking at it as Trump has power. Trump is president, so that means Trump and his administration are the only thing that we should be focusing on. When in fact, a lot of the people that are now in the streets, unfortunately, did not have the capacity or the ability at that time, over the time of 8 years in the Obama administration, to muster the same type of political activity. And we have to look at why that was. There's a lot of people who will say, oh, well, why are you late shaming, or why are you criticizing people who are just getting into political activity? And that's another error. And I think to me, that's an error, another error that Lenin described as, you know, tailing the mass movement, not understanding the root causes of why certain phenomena happens at one time and it doesn't happen in another. I think we have to be really clear about all of these things and start to really implement them when we're out in the streets, to really find the slogans that we can create that don't just say dump Trump and are not clear about the threat that the Democratic Party and their Republican Party allies pose to humanity, and at the same time begin to conduct activities in a very in an internal manner that can, create a new way of thinking about this time that I think truly needs to include a Marxist analysis, a socialist and revolutionary analysis of this current period. So we can begin to chip away at the and all of the misconceptions and, you know, bourgeois ruling class propaganda that surrounds this whole period, because it's getting quite confusing for a lot of people when they turn on MSNBC and you have somebody like Rachel Maddow talking about how Putin bankrolled anti-NATO support for, you know, in Sweden. These things are they're a problem because it creates a narrative that that is utterly simplistic, utterly Russophobic, utterly dangerous and warmongering, and ultimately reinforces the very conditions that produced this, you know, Trump era.
You know, finally, using that same imagery, you had before November 8th or before the 2016 campaign, that sea of people who are now carrying signs that say dump Trump with the subtitle Socialism Now, they were in the street with a sign that said Socialism Now beforehand, and it was a very small contingent as opposed to a sea of people. Now, they need to be looking at the people that are standing next to them looking at it in that context that you describe and wondering, yeah, why are they here now instead of worrying about shaming people, worrying about some kind of an analysis and understanding the nature of the opposition that they are standing shoulder to shoulder with?
Yeah, that's the real struggle, because when you bring up these things, the response can often be, well, we have to be involved. And no one, I don't think anyone has said, don't be, you know, don't get involved in political struggle or political activity that occurs over, you know, some very legitimate concerns over the Trump administration in some ways, and some very illegitimate concerns in another, you know, in many other ways. And we can take this kind of dialectic between, Trump's rhetoric over escalating the attack on undocumented people versus the opposition to him based on his desire to ease relations with Russia or scale back wars to overthrow the Syrian government, for example. I mean, we have to have these conversations with the people in the streets in order for us to discern exactly who they are, because there is this nonprofit industrial complex. There is the Democratic Party money pouring into the resistance against Trump. And how are we going to win over the genuine people who can be won over to a position in an analysis that better describes what's going on and that can better guide our action moving forward, versus those who are ultimately trying to channel resistance, you know, and concerns into, at the most, elect another Democrat.
Danny Haifong has a regular column at blackagendareport.com. When the fox becomes a wolf, understanding the election of DNC Chairman Tom Perez. Danny, thank you very much. Pleasure as always.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.